Hi, my name's Tori and I wish I knew more about blood products.
Hi, my name's Letitia. I wish I knew more about taking care of myself when starting shift work.
Hi, my name is Lydia. I wish I would know more about how to work as in a team and solve conflict.
Hello, welcome to Five Things, the nursing podcast from the Royal Brisbane and Women's Hospital. My name is Liz Crowe.
I'm Jesse Spur, and this is a podcast by, for, and with the amazing nurses and health professionals in our corner of the world. We hope to connect with a global community as we move from surviving to thriving. Welcome to Five Things.
Hello, my name is Liz Crowe.
And I'm Jesse Spur.
Welcome to another episode of Five Things Nursing, and today we are welcoming Matt Stewart, who is an advanced musculoskeletal physiotherapist here at the Royal Brisbane and Women's Hospital, and he's coming to talk to us about back pain. Hello, Matt.
Good morning.
Pretty excited to have you here talking about this. This is one that's very close to home for a lot of nurses. And in the public perception, I think there's often three things that are synonymous with nursing, and it's poo, sensible shoes, and back pain. So we're going to get into one of those three today. Maybe two if footwork comes up.
Hopefully the latter.
Anyway. Excellent. So Matt, we'd love to hear your professional origin story, sort of how you got into physio and then into that specialised area in physiotherapy. It would be awesome.
Yeah. In high school, I thought I was going to be a doctor. And then someone advised me that I needed to study something other than science first. So I got a degree in physio. I thought physio works with sports people. I like sports. I'll do physio. And so got into physio, realised that I probably didn't want to do medicine, and ended up in the hospital system. And after about 6 or 7 years, I realised that ward work wasn't the best fit for me, and ended up getting into outpatients and ended up doing musculoskeletal masters in 2012, and then been in an advanced practice role since that time.
So what does the day in the life of a musculoskeletal physiotherapist look like in the hospital system or outpatient system where you work?
In my role specifically, I work in a substitutionary role for surgeons, so orthopaedic and neurosurgeons and maxillofacial surgeons. So we'll see patients that have been referred in to specialist outpatients. So usually we have a clinic in the morning, number of new patients, number of review patients, and then there's a fair bit of paperwork communicating with GPs and referrers and communicating with the multidisciplinary team, allied health team that we have as part of the service as well.
Excellent. All right. I think this is going to be one of those podcasts where everybody can relate at some stage of their lives. So number one, back pain. What is it and what causes it?
So there's a simple answer. Back pain is pain that's experienced in your back. So it's anywhere from your head to
I can work that one out.
Yep. Head to your buttocks generally. It can be associated with some leg pain or some arm pain. And it's a really common thing. We know in Australia about 80% of people will have lower back pain at some stage in their lives. And about 4 million people in Australia report back problems in any year. So that's 16% of people, one in six. That's very common.
That's huge. And in terms of causes, given that it's such a high amount, I'm just guessing, is some of that just because we're inactive and we're sitting in a chair, perhaps not with the best posture or...?
I think there's many different causes of back pain. So one of the things that is common, you know, in nursing, but also in other manual jobs, is that heavy repetitive tasks. So any awkward movements can cause back pain. Not getting enough regular physical activity is also another cause. So being sedentary, so like you say, you know, poor posture. But there's other things that we maybe don't often think of straight up. So being overweight or obese can contribute to back pain. And stress is a common thing that can contribute to someone experiencing back pain and fatigue alongside that. And then in much less frequent circumstances, there's more kind of sinister causes of back pain. So things like, you know, fractures or cancer, infections or inflammatory problems. So much less frequent causes there.
So I think we've kind of skipped straight into talking about back pain, but it's probably good to just rewind a little bit and have a little chat about pain. What can you tell us about that? And then we can kind of build on that for how someone experiences back pain.
That's a really good question, Jesse. I think we often think that pain is associated with some sort of injury. And often that's in other parts of the body. It's a bit more clear to see when we've injured something, we get pain, that injury resolves and the pain goes away. But it can get a bit clouded in back pain, particularly because you can't see your spine, you can't see the structures in your back. And what the research has shown is that back pain is not equal to tissue damage. It's much more complex than that. So there is physical contributors to back pain, but there's also psychological and social contributors that contribute to back pain as well. And so if you look there's a paper from 2007 by Lorimer Moseley, who was a physio here at the Royal back in the early 2000s. He conceptualized pain as what we become aware of when our nervous system determines that there's some sort of threat or danger to our body tissue.
Mm. So interesting. And it is funny because when people have hurt they'll say, I've hurt my back. Whereas what you're saying is that you've got pain and it's real, but it may not necessarily mean that there is something physically wrong.
Correct. Yep. Pain, like in the early stages of pain, it can be a bit more clear. You've strained a muscle or a ligament or a joint or something like that. But as pain continues, it becomes much less about the tissue damage and some secondary changes that can happen in the body physically, but also things like, you know, your past experience of pain, your family members' experience of pain, the meaning that you attribute to the pain, your people's opinions. So certainly that, you know, that perception that nursing causes back pain is something that can, I guess, in a sense, sensitize people, people's nervous system when they do have an injury to put them in a place where they might get persisting or ongoing back pain.
Yeah, we actually have got a fantastic podcast with Melanie Proper, who's one of the nurse practitioners in pain here. So highly recommend people go back and have a listen to that because it has changed my whole relationship with my body with regards to pain. Some wonderful insights. But it pain is a complex and often has psychosocial components to it.
Yeah, and interesting picking up and circling back to the type of work that you do where you're saying it's often substitution work for other specialties. I guess there's a fairly common mix of that will fall into that functional disorder of back pain as opposed to acute injury. Is that a fair kind of take that a lot of the work you're doing is sorting out what's what?
That's right, Jesse. Yeah. We see the category 2 and category 3 patients, so semi-urgent and non-urgent patients. So they are people that have had pain for, you know, more than 3 months, which is where we would typically transition to calling it chronic or persistent pain.
And you call it substitution because someone has requested to see an orthopedic surgeon and they see you and your team first.
That's right. Yeah, so often these people have, hurt their back. They might have had some sort of care in the community, seen their GP and got referrals or medications or scans. The pain hasn't resolved with whatever intervention they've had, and so they've referred on for a specialist opinion, essentially. So many times people come in expecting surgery is the answer because they've tried everything else, but I think with some higher level and experienced clinicians, we can help to, I guess, delineate what is needed to go on to see the surgeons, what is a condition that needs surgical intervention and what doesn't need surgical intervention.
Okay, so we've had a little discussion about back pain that's much more complex than I've got an injury and I need an immediate intervention. And now we're going to talk about number two, prevention of back pain. So how can we avoid getting there in the first place?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think healthy lifestyle choices can prevent some types of back pain. So if we, probably the big things in that is exercise, maintaining a healthy weight, maintaining good postures, and, you know, safe lifting practices. Quitting smoking is also something that can be helpful in preventing lower back pain, and kind of learning relaxation techniques and mindfulness, which can help to manage the stress that I said can contribute to people's pain experience. Yep.
All right. I'm very curious. We know that smoking and vaping has huge associations with a whole range of health issues, but what on earth is the association with back pain?
That's a good question. I'm no expert in the area, but my understanding is with smoking or vaping, it affects the amount of oxygen that gets to your tissues, and so the health of your tissues aren't as good, and so that would make you more susceptible to a physical injury to tissues. It also has a pro-inflammatory effect in your body. So when you've got increased levels of inflammatory markers in your system, that can also kind of sensitize your nervous system and make your pain experience more as well.
So interesting.
I feel like we've got so many things to expand off on with this as well. And I, one of the things that's often fairly superficially attended to is that exercise is good. Like it's good to do exercise, that'll reduce your risk. Are there particular types of exercise that you would encourage as a, I guess, preconditioning or preventative, having greater benefit than others?
There's probably a few types of exercise that that's beneficial in preventing back pain. One would be low impact aerobic exercise. So where you're getting your heart rate up, you're starting to puff a bit. Probably say moderate intensity aerobic exercise. So we'd say that's where you can talk, but you can't sing. And examples of activities like that would be walking or swimming, Tai Chi, or, you know, running for some people. So that kind of activity. A second type would be strengthening exercises. And so the National Physical Activity Guidelines say we should do... everyone knows that we should do 30 minutes of moderate intensity exercise every day, but the guidelines also say we should do two sessions of strengthening exercises each week as well. So that can be in a gym or it can be just using body weight exercises as well. And I think that's really important in manual professions as well, to make sure that we're getting a broad coverage of strengthening rather than just strengthening in the kind of repetitive tasks that we do in a healthcare setting or in a in any manual heavy labor setting. And probably the third type of exercise would be stretching or just general movement exercises. So that could be something like yoga. Tai Chi could come in there as well.
What about Pilates?
Yes, and Pilates would come in there as well. So it's any kind of exercise that's or movement that's taking your joints through their full range of movement rather than just in the usual ranges that we operate in day to day.
In terms of strengthening your back at the gym, what I'm asking for a friend, what specifically are good activities to do in the gym that targets kind of your muscle strength in your back?
Yeah, I think a lot of if you do free weights, yep. That's probably a better way to strengthen your back as well as your arms and legs, rather than just doing machine-based weights where your back's supported and you're really just pushing your arms or pushing your legs. So, if I was giving advice to people, normally I would say be like don't support your trunk as such, and do your free weight exercises or your body weight exercises. So certainly strengthening your gluteus maximus muscles, your buttock muscles, is very helpful for lower back pain, and keeping the muscles around your shoulder blades nice and strong is really important for that kind of upper back and neck pain. So when you're doing your upper body session, you want to make sure that you're keeping your shoulders and your shoulder blades in a good position.
Interestingly, I noticed you answered that question without actually specifically saying do stuff that targets like increasing strength in back muscles and more, I guess, could be posturally related. So you're getting activation of your muscles that maintain effective posture. The spin-off of that is how important is posture and how do we facilitate that in what we're doing with work?
Yeah, posture's important, like I said. We often think or have been brought up to think that posture is about being very upright and erect and, you know, being able to walk with a book on your head. I think a lot of ladies particularly get that input from, you know, mothers or grandmothers in their
lives. I'm like, what? Yeah, I'm not supposed to be walking around with a book on my head.
Pull your shoulders back.
Pull your shoulders, that's right.
Breath out, girls. Yeah.
And so in physio, we've really transitioned to saying that your best posture is your next posture. So you don't want to be maintaining one posture all the time. So even maintaining an erect posture all the time can cause you problems because your back is made to move, your neck is made to move. And so we encourage people to modify their posture every 2 or 3 minutes or 5 minutes and, you know, to kind of oscillate, if you like, around a neutral spine.
I do yoga and Pilates and they always say your spine loves to move and how important it is to curve it, twist it, you know, whatever. And after a big day of sitting, that's so much more important, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. We say motion is lotion in physio.
Oh, I like that.
Nice little ring to it.
Yep.
And that's that third point that I made about the exercise before is about stretching and moving our joints through their full range.
So your number three is early management of back pain.
So with early management of back pain, I think back in the day, people used to go and have bed rest and, you know, just stop doing everything. But the research and our clinical experience shows that if you can stay active and get back to your usual activities as soon as possible, that's the best thing. And that's what our national national clinical standard for back pain talks about is maintaining your usual activities and getting back to them as soon as you can, back to work as soon as you can. The thing you can do in those early phases as well is use cold or hot packs in the first few days particularly. There's no one's no better than the other in the early stages, whatever you're comfortable with and whatever helps ease your pain. And the third thing I would say is that gentle movements to explore what hurts and doesn't hurt is very useful in those early stages. So it can be reassuring when you find movements that don't hurt that it's safe to move in those directions. And the movements that do hurt, you know, just to be a bit more careful of that. So just having that curiosity about, you know, what particular movements hurt and what particular movements don't hurt. Can just give you a bit more confidence to move where you can move and just gently push into those movements that do hurt a little bit.
Yeah, it's so good to hear you say because, you know, it was once upon a time you hurt your back and people are like, lie flat.
Yeah.
And it can be one of the worst things you can do, isn't it? Because
exactly.
Then the whole back tightens up and you get yourself into more and more trouble.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, and it predisposes you to imbalances between muscles which then take more time to retrain afterwards as well.
Now, I don't know how well this will equate into a podcast, but I love a good cat-cow. You know, the stretch. You don't know what that is, Jesse? You know, like you're on all fours and you curl your back up like a cat, like an arch of the cat, and then you flatten it out like a cow and extend your neck. And it's a big yoga move. How good is the cat-cow for your back?
It's good. Yeah, it's neither good nor bad.
That was an inferential question, Liz Craig. I thought, doing it. How good is it? Yeah. Tell me it's good.
I thought I was going to get like these full credit marks, like the cat cow is great for movement of your back.
Yeah. No, it's good. It's good for movement. And, you know, oftentimes in that acute phase, one of the movements might be more painful than the other movement or might be more helpful than the other movement. It's just a matter of, you know, test and see.
Cause it's very hard to talk in generalized nature about this stuff, isn't it? Because you've got stuff that could be a joint capsule injury in your back. You've got stuff that can be muscle strain and potentially have an ongoing muscle spasm problem that's inhibiting movement and pain. That's got to, there is an element of having to rest certain things to actually like terminate the muscle spasm. It's really evolving quite quickly. Like the old thing of icing injuries to promote healing has kind of gone out the window, and it's more about considering, like, that's why ice and heat packs are largely synonymous. It's whatever works for pain reduction, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, and certainly in those early phases, like, we don't know, and particularly with backs, we don't know if it's a joint sprain or a muscle strain or, you know, nerve getting irritated.
Psychological.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so we just want to move in, you know, whatever way is going to be helpful for us to get going again.
Yeah. And I know you're not a medical doctor, but I'm guessing to have some ibuprofen or Panadol in those early stages is also okay?
I always qualify that with I'm not qualified to provide specific medicines advice.
Yeah.
I would normally think that would be safe. But that, again, depends on your medical history and, you know, whatever other medication you might be taking.
Yeah. So kind of in potentially a grossly oversimplified thing, I'm kind of picking up in the early phase, just support pain management, use your hot, cold packs, as we said, simple analgesia, et cetera, under the guidance of a medical direction as needed with that. And then gently let pain guide your return to activity, and that's without necessarily progressing to the point where they're engaging a physio or a doctor. If this is just simply us trying to have a mental model for doing this,
that's right. Yeah. We know most cases of back pain resolve within a week or a couple of weeks, and so I think that's a fair summary, Jesse.
Okay, so number four. When do we go to seek healthcare professional advice?
So aside from the work cover situation, you want to seek health professional advice if your back pain is severe and you're having difficulty managing your back pain. So that's stopping you from working, stopping you looking after yourself or doing activities that are important to you. I'd also say if there's been significant trauma associated with the onset of your back pain, that's probably worth seeking some advice around. The third thing I'd say is if your back pain is getting worse, particularly, you know, as the days stretch into a week, if your pain's getting worse, it's probably worth going off and seeing a health professional. The next thing I'd say is if you've got any bladder or bowel disturbance. So that would be particularly if you have difficulty emptying your bladder or controlling your bowel movements, that would be a reason to seek urgent medical advice. So probably presenting to an emergency department in that situation. I would say that's very rare, but I do have to mention it in the context of back pain. And then if you've got any numbness or loss of feeling around your genitals or in your saddle area, that would be another reason. And lastly, if you've got any leg or arm muscle weakness, that would be another reason to get off and see a health professional fairly soon.
So I've got this kind of low-grade persistent back pain. You're saying, you know, go and see a health professional. Who should we go and actually see?
I think you could see a number of different health professionals. I think here in Australia, you could just go and see a local physio and get some advice about that, particularly if it's just low grade, you're not really concerned about anything significant happening. Then, you know, seeing a physiotherapist, if you've got a trusted chiropractor or osteopath or someone like that that you see and you've had good results with before, then yeah, that would be okay to go and see them as well. So if you've got some back pain with leg pain and or arm pain and some weakness associated, you probably want to see someone that's a little more experienced, maybe got some more qualifications behind them. So that could be a musculoskeletal physiotherapist or, you know, get off to see your GP and get some recommendations from your GP.
How would I know that someone is a skeletal physio? You said you've done a master's degree, because I'm wondering, I don't know, how many physios, if I just walked in and said, I need to see someone who's musculoskeletal, they're like, yeah, we all do that.
Yeah, so there's musculoskeletal physiotherapist is a protected title that only Australian Physio Association members that have gone through the titling process can use that title. So there's physiotherapists who treat musculoskeletal conditions, but in terms of a title itself, that's a protected title in that sense. So you could find a musculoskeletal physio by searching through the APA website is a good source, so the Australian Physio Association website. And that in there you can see if people have that titling or not.
So I've woken up on a Sunday morning. I was gardening all day yesterday and I've got a sore back. It's kind of really tight to move. It's restricting my movement. Does going for a massage help?
Look, it can help, yeah. But if I was talking to you on that Sunday morning, I would probably reassure you that that's normal to experience some back pain after doing that level of exercise. It's the same if someone went for a bike ride on a Saturday and woke up on the Sunday with sore legs. You've exercised some muscles. Maybe that's more than they're used to. So I would reassure you as the first line. But if that stiffness and tightness persisted after a few days, then a massage can be helpful to loosen your muscles up, certainly.
So a relaxation massage on day one if you need to, but not a deep tissue massage or a therapeutic massage.
I don't garden, so that was definitely not directed at myself.
And I don't massage, so that's fine.
What a hypothetical.
Yeah.
So your number five is, what are the indications for investigations if you have back pain?
Yes, so I would start by saying that routine use of imaging is discouraged in all the back pain guidelines around the world. So it's encouraged to only have investigations when there's alerting features or serious pathology is suspected, or it's likely to change management. So concerning signs is kind of what I've outlined above for an urgent medical review. So where you've got that bladder or bowel disturbance, you've got numbness or loss of feeling around your genitals, or you've got weakness in your legs or arms, that'd be the three things to consider imaging for.
How often do you think people are getting x-rays, CT scans, MRIs, where really we're just exposing ourselves to radiation without any kind of good outcome?
Too often would be the answer, not just in my opinion, but in all the research studies and the guidelines that exist all highlight that we get too many investigations for back pain. And the risk of that, there's good research and good quality and quantity of research that shows that imaging back pain can increase people's back pain, can increase the duration of back pain, and can contribute to back pain becoming persistent or chronic.
It's really interesting, and I'd imagine some of that is in the space of incidental findings. So you do some imaging on because of a presentation of back pain,
yep.
Without a decision as to how that imaging is necessarily going to impact the management, you find some degenerative changes, maybe age-related, in the spine.
Mm.
Super common.
That's right, yeah.
But really little to no association to that. But now that patient knows they've got degenerative changes in their spine and how that's psychologically going to impact their future movement and their recovery from this back pain, is that a plausible link to the factor of where imaging can increase pain?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We know that there's a whole lot of different findings that are normal, but there's a real nuance to working out what findings are significant and aren't significant. And that requires a thorough examination, like a good interview with someone with back pain and a good physical assessment to then work out what findings are relevant, which is why physiotherapists, advanced musculoskeletal physios, are working in a substitutionary role for surgeons, because that's something that we're good at doing and we have the time to do as well in our services and services like ours across the state and the world.
Mm.
And I noticed that the indications that you mentioned are essentially all spinal cord and spinal nerve involvement or innervation involvement kind of secondary symptoms that you're talking about, not acute back pain that may be musculoskeletal.
That's correct, yeah. Good pickup.
Yeah. So what I've really heard is that a lot of what you're talking about is lifestyle-based. And that if we moved more, if we didn't sit so much, if we ate better, if we had, you know, a lower BMI, et cetera, then we're much less likely to have persistent or chronic back pain.
Yeah, that'd be what the research and the guidelines suggest, yes.
Okay, so I'm going to try and summarise this for our listeners. So number one, back pain, what is it and what is it caused from? And you were saying it's any pain from your head to your buttock. And that 80% of all people at some stage of the game will have some sort of back pain. And that, you know, as we just said, it's predominantly lifestyle factors that really cause back pain. Most of them resolve by themselves, and that it's very rare to have something sinister. Number two, prevention of back pain. Again, healthy lifestyle. So making sure that we move enough, that we've got good posture, that we don't smoke or vape, and that we also focus on relaxation and mindfulness, because there's associations between stress and back pain. And I really love that you said motion is lotion for your back. Number three, early management of back pain. And you gave us three tips. Number one, don't go to bed rest as an immediate thing. The more that you can stay active and keep movement without pain, the better. Number two, hot or cold packs are important, whatever works for you the best, that's the one you should use. And number three, gentle movement. The fourth topic we talked about is when to seek professional help. And you were kind of saying, if you've been gardening all day and you wake up with a sore back, you probably don't need to do anything. It's going to self-resolve. But if you've got persistent pain, you might want to go and seek any accredited healthcare professional can have a look. If the pain is worsening or persisting, or you've got tingling or weakness, that's when you'd go and see a general practitioner. And your number five were indications for investigations. And again, you were very clear that imaging, from a research perspective around the world, imaging is not encouraged unless there's going to be a change in management or there's concern about pathology. But at the end of the day, our backs are part of our bodies. If we overuse them, you're going to get pain. If you don't use it enough, you're going to get pain. And we've got to be a good, healthy lifestyle. How'd I go?
That's a pretty good summary, Liz. Well done.
Okay. Matt, thank you so much for joining us today on Five Things Nursing.
Yeah, you're welcome.
The Royal Brisbane and Women's Hospital Five Things Nursing podcast acknowledges the Turrbal and Yuggera as the First Nations owners of the lands we now tread. We pay respect to their elders, laws, customs and creation spirits. We recognise that these lands have always been places of healing, teaching and learning. We also wish to acknowledge the First Nations people of the lands of our global community and encourage our listeners to seek out, listen, and learn from the knowledge held in your shared space. As well as all major podcast outlets, you can find us at fivethingsnursing.podbean.com. Please also subscribe and give us a rating on your listening platform of choice. This helps others find the podcast. And finally, if you'd like to connect with Liz or myself on Twitter, we can be found at LizCrow2, and for me, it's inject_orange. We would absolutely love to hear your thoughts, ideas, or feedback. Thanks for listening to Five Things,